Hey everyone, Zach here from the future. I just wanted to pop in before the episode and give you a heads up that we had some mic issues during the first maybe 5 minutes of the show, so you'll occasionally hear some pops and crackles in the mix. Everything gets fixed close to about 6 minutes into our conversation, and the preceding audio is perfectly listenable, even with those small hiccups. So, without further ado, here's our conversation with Deez covering minute 73 of Dune Part 2. Enjoy! Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are once again joined by a friend of the show, Deez. How's it going, Deez?
Oh man, I am living. It's great. I'm looking forward to this minute in particular. I think there's some real magic here.
I hope so, because I have to admit something, not to y'all know, but to our listenership here. I fucked up.
Yeah, this episode is going to sound a little different.
Maybe just a little bit. If my editing skills are good enough, it will sound seamless. But we're a week later right now. This is a rare instance. I think the first instance where I fucked up.
Yeah.
And when we were recording our stretch of minutes last week, this particular episode, either I didn't hit the right key sequence on my keyboard or something, but our side, mine and John's side, did not get recorded. So
professional podcasters, by the way.
Can we call ourselves professionals?
Absolutely not. We've never been paid.
We've never been paid for this.
So we're not professional. But in fairness, at this point, there's been close to like 230 episodes that have been released.
Yeah.
I think one fuck up within that time period is acceptable.
Yeah. It was.
There have been some close calls, especially on like the editing portion where you almost lost.
I've almost lost some episodes, but I've got them back. And yep. we've realized maybe 10 minutes into an episode that we weren't recording.
Sure.
But never a full like 45 minutes to an hour of good conversation just gone.
We were just having so much fun.
It's hard because in that episode discussed exactly what Arafel is, and that's lost, and I don't remember. I don't know if you guys remember. And so now we actually have to fear the Ixians because, if they can't make Arafel or not, and that's sad. That's hard. And, but to your guys' credit, you changed my plane ticket home for me. You threw two more half Doritos down in the basement. Like I was comfortable. Yep. You know, it's great. Like, a little later.
Well, thanks for sticking it out. And I really hated that we solved so much of Dune's problems. For the next movie, we planned it out. We had all these concrete ideas just done. We had them done. We solved it on that one episode.
We did our own casting for Leto II, and Ghanima, and then that got fucking overwritten.
So I guess the people will never know. So, yeah. Sorry about that.
They'll never know. I have the audio on my end. If we really want to give people a challenge, we can give them one half of the conversation and just let them try and fill it in on their own. That'll be for our 1,000 a week in a Patreon tier. Feel free to sign up if you want to try the last minute challenge. It's there for you.
Oh God.
I still think that would be a very fun idea.
I kind of want to go back and listen to it just to figure out, like, just to try and remember these conversations. There's only, we'll get into it later.
So we are going to try to recreate that magic today, almost a week later. Thankfully, we record with ample runtime or runway. We were able to get this in. So the listener audience will never know the difference. Had I not said anything, they would have never known the difference.
Had we not spent the last 5 minutes talking about all the differences, they would never know the differences.
We should just make that entire section of the episode one of those sensor beeps and just hold on.
Okay, well, let's get into it, folks. All right, we are here. We are talking about minutes 72 through 73. We are picking up with Fade being really fucking menacing.
Really fucking weird.
Yeah. Well, scary. I think in this point, yeah, that's maybe just his normal state.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can call him weird. That's just him being normal.
Yeah.
So as Fade grabs this knife and aggressively sticks his tongue out, he takes the back of the blade and just runs it down the center of his tongue. And he is maintaining some aggressive eye contact with the, I forget what we called him last week.
Oh yeah. Malakili, the Rancor Keeper.
Malakili, the Rancor Keeper. That's better than what I have in my notes, which is just Blade Gimp. he's wearing his leather crop top and he's got his hood on. And,
yeah.
And he's sweaty as fuck.
Yeah, not as sweaty as he will be, but, you know, still sweaty. Yep. Which, I've got to say, as a pair of, you know, not the thinnest people in the world in Georgia in the summer, yeah. I feel like you and I can relate.
Yeah, I'm a naturally sweaty man.
Yeah.
Even when I was super thin, I was a naturally sweaty man.
It rained a little earlier today. And yep. immediately started steaming off of the roads, mm-hmm. and yep. I felt that everywhere.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. Just, just a couple of crawdads out here on the, in the pod. Oh,
boy. Listen, I prefer the term men of substance. and as someone also who has sweated regardless of the general proportions of my body, I felt very seen. By the bladesmith. So
it is what we would call swamp ass weather right now.
So Fate's got this blade, right? And he's licked it, he's tasted it. I guess it tastes fine to him. But he's got to do some more tests.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just taste a blade to know that it's good. You have to test it out. So what does he do in a shocking turn of events? He just takes the blade and swings it, and this raincoat who's standing next to him just catches it in the throat, and she just immediately goes down.
Well, she doesn't go down. She drops. We hear her drop the bowl of the like melted plastic that they were rubbing all over him and everything, yeah. And she's like clawing at her neck and like gasping and everything.
This is Fade slander, first of all. Okay, Fade had a very good reason.
I figured you'd be okay with that.
Well, except on April 1st. Yes,
that's fair.
But you know, if the attendant makes a sudden move, and I am the Na Baron, he didn't have a choice. He has to protect the Harkonnen line, and. You know, the way I see it, frankly, that attendant had it coming. So I'm not gonna sit here and quietly let the future emperor of the known universe, sorry, spoiler alert, be slandered in this way. I'm just not, and so I've said my piece, and I feel better. So thank you.
So she falls down, and. Fade turns to his left, and we see this other raincoat sitting there, or standing there.
Trembling.
Just shaking. Like a leaf in the wind, just shaking. And he walks up to her so casually, and just stabs, like, three or four times, at least.
Right in the gut, and, like, each time she's just like, ah!
She doesn't break eye contact, if I remember correctly. She is staring him down the entire time.
Again, I feel like we're getting into kind of murky territory here. Fade, I'm sure, had a very good reason for killing that attendant. And I think it's really important that we remember that there are two sides to every one-sided homicidal murder. And I think we need to give Fade a little room to, you know, at least explain himself.
Well, I don't think we're going to get it.
Yeah.
because he's doing all this with zero emotion in his eyes. He's just
just having fun, and so are his harpies.
Mm-hmm.
Because
his catsuit group.
Yeah, his catsuit group. Because you know they just see a fresh snack on the ground,
mm-hmm.
so they're all excited about it.
I do think it's interesting because some of the back lore on the knives. So you have the black blade and the white blade, and that in the books, the symbolism of that gets teased out a little bit more. But the black blade, which again, ironic because he's using the white one here, the black blade is supposed to be, I believe, symbolic of the purity of just killing, like. Mm-hmm. It represents like just the like the violence and like the purity of that violence.
Yeah.
And that's what we're getting. I think that strange women pulling swords out of ponds is actually a great way of deciding government continuance.
Continuity. Help, I'm being repressed.
We all need watery bents tossing scimitars at us.
but I think, like, so one, we're seeing that twisted. I think we see a lot in Fade that is twisted. I think the Sisterhood has made that very clear. We have now watched him murder two people for funsies. and so I think that is also kind of an interesting thing to just consider here is like, it's not, I don't think it's just like Fade is, as Irulan so succinctly put it, psychotic. and I think we're seeing that here. And I think there's so much that you're getting from his facial expressions, also from the expressions of the attendant. You know, I hadn't thought about the fact that, the attendant is just kind of like maintaining eye contact with him the entire time.
Yeah.
Like not, doesn't seem to be particularly surprised by this, also does not seem to be particularly dismayed by this. And so it's like also the normalization of just how twisted this situation is, like,
yeah.
You're getting a lot of context into what Fade brings to the table, into the nurture of the environment that created him, brought in, like, you know, like I said earlier, like this minute is packed and these few seconds are particularly packed in the most upsetting way. you know, shout out Denis. I guess you can make good movies. You know.
Well, if you think about the let's take a thought experiment here for a moment. Think about the life of these attendants. You know? They don't look particularly old, so I'm going to guess they are in their late teens, mm-hmm. early 20s.
Well, it doesn't help that Fade keeps killing them.
Well, yeah, well, and that's kind of what I was getting at, is like they have probably seen all of their coworkers die.
Turnover is a son of a bitch.
Yes, it truly is. So with them, I think the lack of surprise that you talked about a second ago is like the person's like, oh, shit, yeah, this is happening. I mean, I guess it was bound to happen.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect it to happen today.
Mm.
She's like, I thought I was doing a good job. I was just holding the bowl of ink. That's I was doing good.
Yeah, I think you're certainly echoes of when we hear Gurney, you know, throw out the Harkonnens are brutal line in the first movie.
Brutal.
That is kind of echoing in my head, like, while we watch this, and not just because the delivery of it was really exactly what I think I wanted out of that scene, but also, like, we keep getting these little subtle reminders that, yes, the Harkonnens are actually a rather brutal people, and, you know, I didn't see that coming. It helps that I'm reminded of that, because sometimes you forget, you know? The Baron is just, he's enchanting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really like bright and not viscous, you know, not particularly unctuous as you see him. And so, you know, it's good that you're like, hey, no, don't forget, the Harkonnens are they have a mean streak.
That's true.
Sure.
Now, okay, so this actually brings up a decent point for me to ask you this question, Deez. This is a question that I think John and I posed each other on some episode that either just came out or are about to come out. Would Valia Harkonnen from Dune Prophecy recognize the Harkonnen family as we see it in these movies? Because they are very different families. It's very different vibes to those families. And that's what we're seeing is basically the effect of, oh God, how many years? A couple thousand at least.
10,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, a lot. Because 10,000 is pre-guild, I guess.
Prophecy is...
That wasn't pre-guild.
Prophecy is like 30-something years after the foundation of the guild.
Right,
so.
Okay.
So yeah, about 10,000 years. Right. Nascent guild, yeah.
So would Valia recognize him? I said no. Not to lead your answer, but I said no.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you are leading my answer, because I think my answer is actually yes. Hmm. I think Valia... I feel like she would have wished against this. I feel like the way that the Atreides shaped the narrative around the Harkonnen family after the Battle of Khorne. It's the Battle of Khorne, I think,
Yeah.
I think that has certainly not helped, but I feel like the potential for this kind of a brutal through line to exist, I feel like that kind of had to always be there, like at least the potential for it. I feel like Valia, like, she would not be happy with the Harkonnens as we meet them in Dune, but I think she would have at least known that the building blocks and the potential were there. So I think she could probably recognize it. I doubt she would be particularly thrilled with what she would see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, she was brutal. I mean, in her own way, she was a brutal person.
Sure, but not in a psychopathic, like, you know, or I guess just like completely domineering way that Fade and Vladimir are.
Sure.
So she and the rest of the Harkonnen family at the time definitely seemed to be a bit more like subtle in their manipulation and everything, but I don't know, not as overt.
Sure.
But I think, you know, I mean, like, I mean, with her, that's kind of, you know, this early inductee into the Bene Gesserit order, like, they are very good at reading people. I mean, they don't have any, there's no mystery to them about who Fade is. And I think that is, like, in spite of the fact that none of them, I don't think, have actually, like, met him, like GHM may have at some point, but like Irulan hasn't. The other sisters that are gonna pop in a little bit later clearly haven't. They're not even happy to be on Giedi Prime.
Yeah.
But they know exactly who he is, and I feel like that sensitivity to, like, humanity, to being able to kind of sort through, like, even sift people down to humans and animals, as the sisterhood explicitly does, like, to their own ends. You know, I don't know. I feel like, I guess, like, a lot can change in 10,000 years or, you know, however long it's been.
For sure.
You know, I mean, I haven't been alive that long. I couldn't tell you, but I feel like it could. There's potential there. Even then, like, I don't know. I feel like at least in Herbert's telling of humanity, it feels like fundamental natures are inscribed, and breaking out of them is extremely rare and remarkable.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I think I guess just to repeat what I've kind of said already, but I think like, I think she would know. She wouldn't like it, but she would understand how they got there, or understand how they could potentially get there.
Okay. I mean, there's no answer to this question. I think it's just a good thought experiment that we as Dune nerds can partake in.
I love it.
So back to our minute, because we were only like 15 seconds into this minute at this point.
About give or take.
So after the raincoat that Fade stabs falls down, we get a shot of the third attendant, and she is also just trembling, but she is staring straight ahead. She is not making eye contact. She does not want the teacher to call on her to read. She's just looking straight down at her desk and just trembling with her bowl. Fortunately for her, Fade does not come over and murk her like he's done the other two.
No, he's got some feedback on the knife.
Right. From some fearless feedback. He turns back to the Rancor keeper in the room, and he says, I don't know if it was, I think it's at this point, I really heard his, I'm trying to do a Stellan Skarsgård impression.
While also still like having just been doing Elvis for, you know, however long that shoot was. Right.
Like I think we talked about it in the last minute, but this is where I really, really heard it here.
Yeah.
But he turns back to him. He says, it's the tip, should be sharper.
A notch off balance. It's the tip, should be sharper.
A notch off balance. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that this might be one of the scariest lines in the movie. Mm-hmm. Because up to this point, you've only been told that Fade is crazy. And you've only seen Fade do crazy things. Stab two attendants. Have the six-pack that he does. Stick his tongue out in one of the most violently aggressive gestures I've ever seen. But here, like, you learn he knows his shit. He knows exactly what he wants in an instrument of killing. And he can tell you exactly what is defective to it, down to a notch of balance. And that should, like, that should perk people's ears up. Now, I would like to give credit to the knife maker. I just watched this knife kill two people, and I believe that Doug Marcaida would have absolutely passed this knife on Forge and Fire. It would have gotten an It Will Kill. We know it will kill because it did. And so, you know, Fade might be being a hair critical here, but the fact that he knows that and can tell it, that should scare you. Like, we know that ultimately Paul will prevail, but for the storytelling to be successful, you have to at least be willing to accept that the potential for Paul to fail is there. And in the figure of Fade, you are given every opportunity to know this guy is the real deal. Like, he could absolutely best Paul in a one-on-one duel, and that should scare everybody. Because, you know, for any of Paul's shortcomings, the Bene Gesserit sisterhood were more than willing to see him grow up and develop after he navigated the Gom Jabbar. And even though this is pre-Gom Fade that we're seeing here, like, he's no joke, and they're making it very, very clear that that is the case.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so that put a question into my mind that I'm going to save for later.
Okay.
So I'm going to save this question for later, but don't let me forget, please.
Okay. So after Fade gives his feedback, we get like a brief moment of him like continuing to stare down the super sweaty knife bearer, and then we cut to another part of the dungeon. A goon sesh, if you were.
We've got some goons.
Yeah, we've got we've got a 5-on-1 goon sesh where there are four goons holding down a very notably not Harkonnen, because he's not pasty white, pale, and also, you know, hairy man.
He's got a glimpse of hair.
Yeah. Yes. So. Oh, more than a glimpse. But He's a notably muscular, not pasty, pale, hairy man being held down by four goons while a fifth masked goon wields a very large, very uncomfortable looking needle that he just injects right into the neck of this non-Harkonnen man.
Yeah.
Five guys, no burgers, no fries, just drugs into the neck.
Straight Cajun seasoning.
As violently as they possibly can.
Now, I'm not a huge needle fan. I'm not a fan of huge needles. I'm also not a fan of small needles either.
Okay.
This sent chills down my spine when I saw this, like watching it close up like this.
I think he felt more than chills down his spine.
Probably. Yeah.
Only for a moment. And then the drug kicked in.
I guess this is like akin to like what a, what's the procedure where they like send the needle into your spine to take like spinal fluid is like an epidural.
Spinal tap.
Spinal tap. That's the movie.
Spinal tap.
But it's like an epidural.
Well, so the epidural is the pain medication that goes into your spine, but the spinal tap is what
the movie.
The spinal tap is what they do when they want to drain like cerebrospinal fluid for whatever reason. Okay. So, well,
but I know they use a thick fucking needle for that shit.
Yeah.
Gross. Don't enjoy this. This gives me almost as much anxiety as the or not anxiety, but just like the heebie-jeebies as the coffee service for the Fremen does. I do not like the Fremen coffee service. I think that is disgusting.
What? That's very rude of you.
What's a little spit between friends, dude?
Yeah, dude.
It's a lot. That's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, listen, judging by what you've just told us, I imagine you've probably never tried to make a whole cup of coffee with just spit, and I'm here to tell you it's hard.
Yeah, you're correct. I will also say that it has been close to 9 months since I've had a cup of coffee, so gross.
Oh, good for you.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying. You know, cut down the caffeine intake.
I'm going to have another shot of espresso in your honor after we're done recording.
Yeah. We're not with this goon sesh very, very long though, because we've entered another goon sesh with four other goons and then the same masked goon, you know, and walking into the frame, and we're following this same, probably very same needle, being transferred from one goon to another. So, you know, we're not engaging in safe, sharps, disposal practices here on Gady Prime. We're just kind of, you know,
Dr. Lister is incredibly disappointed with the lack of sterilization of the instruments between quick neck stab procedures here.
Is that Lister as in Listerine?
Yeah, turns out same guy. One of my favorite little factoids. Listerine, named for Dr. Lister, who, much to the benefit of humanity, stumbled on a little thing called do your dishes after a medical procedure
called
and rather
clean
than
your tools,
rather than just wiping the scalpel off on your apron after the fifth operation of the day and using it again for whatever the next bloodletting is you have on the calendar, he sterilized his instruments. And that is a practice that, thank God, medical practitioners still follow today, because it reduced the lethality of medicine that was otherwise hopefully good for you by a pretty significant margin. So shout out Dr. Lister, shout out Listerine. Every time you take a swig of that, you do it in remembrance of the doctor.
Shout out disinfecting things.
Yeah. Just
general disinfecting things.
Yeah. You know. Who'd have thought that would be beneficial to humanity's survival on and off the battlefield?
We can tell this one particular goon is a doctor goon because he's got his mask on.
Yeah.
He's got his leather mask on, which I got some beefs with this. Now, we all lived through 2020 and 2021. There's a lot of complaints about not being able to breathe through masks, which are just like standard, standard, you know, medical masks. There is no fucking way this guy can breathe through a leather mask. I didn't believe those folks who said they couldn't breathe through just like N95s or whatever. I didn't believe those people. I would believe him if he said it.
It's got to be so gross and like sweaty on the inside of that mask. Too.
Moldy. Oh my God.
Speaking of disinfecting, you are never disinfecting a leather mask.
No,
you can't. There's no way to do that. That thing is nasty.
As someone who works a fair amount with leather, like, okay, side note, I do like leather crafts as a hobby of mine.
Yeah, well, sure.
I have many clients.
Call it whatever you want.
Yeah, that would be, I think, I'll go ahead and say almost impossible to breathe through, unless they have some future leather, like a future cow that has perforated skin, I guess.
Perforated.
Thank you. Sorry. Yeah. I switched the E and the R in my head.
I don't see it. For a family that made their money trading in whale fur, I think they like the classic.
Don't forget whale cum.
Oh, yeah. They did deal in whale cum, too.
It has medicinal values.
Hey, whomst amongst us, okay? All right. I've been known to deal in some ambergris in my day.
So Dr. Goon and his cadre of goons, they make it to the third cell here.
Yeah, Dr. Goon and the goons, they're making their way down the hallway, and what's the first thing you hear but come? I won't die like a fool. Kill me now. And yep. Boy howdy, we are getting introduced to one of the hardest, coldest characters in this film.
Reintroduced, even.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because we get to see our boy, who we have talked about at length on this show, Lanville.
Yeah.
We finally get to see Lanville again. And now I know Lanville is a movie creation. He is kind of a composite character of a few different folks in the book. All unnamed Atreides, like soldiers, basically, but they kind of rolled all the different roles together into this one character called Lanville, and we love him because this guy is fucking cool.
Well, I mean, you know, just to recap everything that we've done with Lanville before, right? We met him when we met Duncan Idaho at the start of part one because Duncan, you know, was talking to Lanville about, you know, how the stabilizers felt off or whatever on his ship.
Adjust your technology. Yeah.
Yep. Lanville was the one that was like that, you know, told everyone, and Paul clearly didn't listen, to turn on their shields when they landed on Arrakis for the very first time. Lanville was there to basically herd Gurney and Leto back into the Arrakeen Palace after shortly landing because it was going to get too hot for them to be outside. Lanville was there to shut everyone up at the small council meeting Paul's first small council meeting with his father and everything when Thufir Hirwat was very beside himself because of his failure to catch the Harkonnen assassin that almost killed Paul with the Hunter Seeker.
Cut from the second movie, that failure.
And then Lanville was also there when Duncan came back with his bag of toys from the Fremen. He was in the background. So.
That's true.
And that's only what we've seen Lanville do on screen. Because off the screen, Lanville, portrayed by Roger Winston Yuan, is the fights and stunts coordinator for these movies. So if you have seen a single punch thrown that you really enjoyed, you can thank Roger Yuan, aka Lieutenant Lanville, for that. And Roger, shout out, much love for everything you gave to these movies.
It's such, I mean, he did such good work with the stunt and fight coordination, and he's a damn good actor too.
Yeah.
So we just need to know if he can sing. He'll be a triple threat.
Ooh.
John, you were just talking, and I loved your soliloquy of what Lanville was there for.
Yeah.
And you started each phrase with Lanville was there, and I think that might be a shirt we need to make.
just
Lanville was there.
I'd wear it.
I don't want to think about doing merch at all. Holy shit.
Oh, come on. You wouldn't wear that shirt?
I would wear the shirt, but I don't want to have to deal with the logistics of selling merch.
Yeah. That sounds awful. I mean, that sounds like it sucks. Fortunately, I'm a guest, so I don't have to do that. So please make that shirt, and I'll take two. And also, please make sure you get them in bigger sizes for men of substance, so that it doesn't look like a smedium on a not smedium frame.
Oh, we'll go all the way to 5X. Don't worry.
Yes.
Oh, man, 8X.
8X.
Now I've got a sleep shirt slash sundress I can wear. This sounds wonderful.
We'll just make them in muumuus for everyone.
Beautiful. I'm here. I'm in.
So Lanville, he hears the door open, which is a cool, like very futuristic, what are those doors called? Like turnstile doors.
Yeah.
So he hears the door open behind him, and we get the I won't die like a fool, not, you know, kill me now. And then, the doctor says, no drugs for you today, Atreides. And that's when we get, you know, fully introduced to Lanville. And he honestly seems surprised by this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that makes his head kind of like turn back. And because, okay, if we think about the movie time, right?
Yep.
It has been anywhere from 0 to less than 9 months.
Safe to say, probably at least a few months, given what we've seen of the growth of Jessica's baby inside of her. Even including the like sudden 5 week shift forward in time within moments of drinking the water of life, but whatever.
Now this scene hits harder in the books because we know that it has been a something like 2 year time jump.
Yeah.
At this point. So I think it's safe to assume that, you know, most every day they have been giving Lanville drugs and having him go fight.
Yep.
So for them to come in and say, not today, we're no drugs today, that's a very surprising thing.
Having him go fight in the same fighting pits that Gurney Halleck himself was fighting in.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Yeah, I think there were a couple of things that stood out for me. I think one, his reaction to being told he's not getting the drug. And to your point, too, I almost think that the time difference is immaterial, whether it's been 2 years of being, you know, essentially held captive, tortured, and likely forced to not just kill other people, but probably some of his comrades at some point for sport, or whether it's only been a matter of months or even weeks, possibly, between the fighting pit scene and the fall of Erekeen, when the Sardaukar and Harkonnen forces ambush the Atreides, even if that was the more recent, he's still coming off of a very short period of time of watching a lot of his friends and brothers in arms and people who reported to him that he would have felt responsible for as a senior officer getting absolutely murked by this army.
Yeah.
And so I think like the trauma might be different, but regardless of the time, like the trauma is there and it's gnarly. And so, you know, it's got this man who's in this room, like almost in this meditative position when they find him, like, he has seen some stuff. He had probably already seen some stuff, but he has definitely seen some stuff now. Yeah. And, you know, so this, like, that moment of realization where it's like, wait a minute, why am I not getting drugs today? Like, yeah, it's almost like he's breaking from this routine of whatever that routine of violence and trauma has looked like previously. Something is different today. And I also thought, too, that the positioning of the slave master in the background also felt really sinister, because he's telling Lanville he's not giving him drugs, which means we're getting full strength Lanville, and like the slave master doesn't, he's not even like facing him when he talks to him. It's like askew. It's like almost this kind of dismissive body position, despite the fact that this man is clearly a killer who is good at doing that. You know, it's like a, like, I don't know, just like the maybe the pretense or like the arrogance that comes with that. Like, I'm pretty certain if you put Landville and the leather mask guy in the arena one-on-one, it's not much of a fight.
Oh, Landville's got his ass, like, for sure.
Yeah, over, but like, leather seconds, mask guy, in this moment, he doesn't he doesn't care. Yeah, like, and so it just felt like, again, like, God, this man is just so rich in characterization for exactly what the Harkonnen stand for and ostensibly what Paul is standing against. Like, oh man, like, it's just, it's so good.
Yeah. So here's the question that I wanted to ask y'all.
Yeah, I was about to say there's something that you wanted to bring up.
Here's the question. So we talked about earlier that Fade is so meticulous with his blades, right? And he wants them to be perfect.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a notch off balance. Now, I'm spoiling a couple of future minutes, but he fights drugged people.
Yeah.
So why does it matter if his blades are a notch off balance?
Because he's going into psychotic. This fight.
Like, no, he's I understand that aspect of it. Yeah. I get that. But like, from a practical standpoint, why does it matter if his blades are a fucking notch off balance? The game's rigged.
Yeah. But like, maybe he's just very particular about the tools that he uses.
I think that this is actually responding. This is a great point. And I'm so glad that we didn't record this same minute previously and have had more time to reflect on what's going on in the meantime. I feel like this actually is a response to what we get in the book, which is Fade often fights drugged enemies, and he's also used to fighting with the shield, and that affects his timing on his strikes, which is a weakness that Paul, I think, considers and exploits, specifically later on, spoiler alert. And here, I think what we're seeing with Fade is like, I feel like Villeneuve is trying to, I mean, it doesn't necessarily get set up in a way that he has to respond to it. But I think what he's telling us is like, it does not matter if you have a shield on or not. It does not matter if you are drugged or not. Fade is infinitely capable of killing you. And that is because he is so disciplined with how he addresses his tools, with how he addresses his technique, all of those things. He cares about it because he knows he needs to be ready to fight in not those conditions. And so every time that he is taking up a blade against whoever, he's doing it in a way where he is considering it to be, you know, preparation for a duel that will be much less stacked in his favor. That's I think how I kind of look at it. You know, essentially he's a consummate killing professional. Like, he knows exactly what he needs to do. Practices all the time, clearly, on the attendance. So, you know, it's like he's going to take it seriously. And
now you just got me thinking, you know, of a movie called Fade the Professional, and I would watch the hell out of that.
He takes it seriously. And again, people are so busy smearing him for being a psycho killer. And I'm like, qu'est-ce que c'est? Like, the guy is just ensure that he is honed in on his tools to do the job well. And that's that's admirable.
Fade.
Oh, God. Well, we go from no drug for you.
Thank you for getting us back on track, John. Yeah.
We go from no drug for you today, Atreides, with the turn back and look, to the most aggressive flashbang I think I've ever had in a movie, because we go from this nice, dark, quiet dungeon to the just all white, you know, black and white skies of Gedi Prime. And, you know, when you and I were in the theaters, this absolutely seared my fucking eyeballs from the inside out. But it's really cool because we get to see for the first time this huge ass arena, these fighting pits that we've been talking about for so long. and we get the, you know, the black sun of Gedi Prime up in the sky and everything. And fanfare music is going, the crowd is cheering, and we get, for I believe the second time in the movie, translated Harkonnen language.
We do, yeah.
Yeah. Under our glorious black sun, we welcome to these special festivities the end of the
minute. Oh, then what does he say?
Sorry.
Now, a couple things here. And if this is in later episodes, just cut this whole section. But
so that's not how I edit. I edit in linear time, so I won't know if they're in it further minutes.
Okay. So a couple things here. The Black Sun was a creation of Denis Villeneuve because he wanted to show just like how harsh and gross the planet is, so much so that like color and light can't even properly flourish on Gedi Prime. You know, in Dune Part 1, we saw how like weird and like bulbous and plastic the planet looked.
Yeah.
And they wanted to like be consistent with that. So what is more off-putting than a sun that puts out infrared light and all you see is just like shades of black and white and no color?
I'm going to disagree with you there for a second, because it is not a sun, or at least according to the books, it's not a sun that puts out infrared light. It is the planet that is polluted so much that that's the only thing that can get in.
That's fair.
Because they do fix it later.
Yeah.
And they talk too, like, about the planet. I think it's, I forget where, but I think it talks about like this planet is so polluted and gross that like oil seeps up from the ground.
Like, so America will invade soon.
Buddy, democracy is on the way.
Get ready.
And, but I mean, this place, it probably smells like feet and oil and shit. And you're looking at it and you get under our glorious black sun. It's like, talk about like trying to make lemonade out of rotten lemons. Like,
I guess
it's glorious. Does not feel glorious. It feels really off-putting and weird. And that is like such a great encapsulation of exactly what the Harkonnens are: off-putting and weird. And they will definitely stab you if you say that to them.
John, you grew up in Florida.
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately,
there's a number of paper mills in Florida.
Oh boy, are there!
And I have visiting Florida for most of my childhood and you know, adult life. That is such a distinct, awful smell that comes out of a paper mill.
Yep.
And that's what I'm imagining Gedi Prime that times 1,000.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know how to describe the smell of a paper mill, because like I want to say just like rotten onions, but that doesn't even come close. Because it's like,
it's degradation.
It's wet pulp. It's chemicals. It's oil. It's like there's like so many smells all in one.
Yeah.
And it's just awful.
Yeah. That's the first thing.
But yeah, I would imagine Gedi Prime smells like the worst paper mill on a wet, you know, humid Florida day that you can imagine.
Ugh.
Gross.
Wow.
One thing before we wrap this minute that I do want to kind of talk about, because I made a little note about it in the notes here. So during the under our glorious black sun, we welcome to these special festivities. We get some footage of the fighting pits, and then we cut to the inside of a box, like a box seat kind of you know, situation, and we see a.
I only sit in box seats, so I just call them seats.
Oh, sorry.
Wow.
Not all of us are super fancy rich. But we see this attendant in there, and he's got a, you know, bald head like the rest of all the other Harkonnens, but like a very pronounced chin and everything. And for the moment, when I very first saw that, I thought that that was a Matt Smith cameo, because Matt Smith is a very tall, lanky person with a very like prominent, you know, jawline and everything, so that would have been funny. But it is not a Matt Smith cameo. And we end our scene with, or we end the minute with just like a all black scene, but we start to see a very large shape begin to move into frame.
Mm. Well, I wonder what it could be.
I don't know. There's a lot of large things in the world.
Tune in tomorrow to find out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of large bulbous things on Gaty Prime, so it literally could be anything.
Could be anything.
Yep.
Well, Deez, any more notes from your end?
Oh, not from me this week. Although I do think this was probably my least favorite minute stopping point of the episodes that we're doing, because it's just like, oh, come on. really, really messing with my Zen Sunni sensibilities here. But fortunately, I'll be back tomorrow. Yep. Or unfortunately, if you have like really not enjoyed this, I'm sorry. You've got a couple more minutes to get through. Yeah, we'll be back tomorrow. We will find out who or what this bulbous figure is that has come on the camera, and can't wait.
Well, as always, the Dune Minute is available elsewhere on the internet whenever you're not listening to us. We are on BlueSky at DuneMinute.com. Deez is available at Atreides Nuts.
Two E's, one Z.
Yep. On BlueSky. And you can also email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us the old-fashioned way.
That's right.
We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute.
See ya.
We love you.